Narayanam Namaskritya Naram Chaiva Narottamam Devim Saraswatim Vyasam Tato Jayam Udirayat Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 13, Chapter entitled The Descendants of Dhruva Maharaj, text number 12. Svavitir Vatsarasyeshta.
Svavitir Vatsarasyeshta.
Vayasuta Shad Ajayan.
Vayasuta Shad Ajayan.
Pushpanam Tigma Ketum Cha. Ishamurjam Vasunjayam. Swavit Bhi Vatsarasyeshta. Vayasuta Shad Atmajam.
Vayasuta Shad Atmajam.
Pushpanam Tigma Ketum Cha. Ishamurjam Vasunjayam.
Ishamurjam Vasunjayam.
Svavitir Vatsaras Yeshta.
Svavitir Vatsaras Yeshta.
Vayasuta Shad Atmajam.
Vayasuta Shad Atmajam.
Pushpanam Tigma Ketum Cha.
Pushpanam Tigma Ketum Cha.
Ishamurjam Vasunjayam.
Ishamurjam Vasunjayam.
Svaviti.
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 Vatsarasya.
Vatsarasya.
Of King Vatsara.
Ishta.
Very dear.
Very dear.
Vaya.
Vaya.
Wife.
Wife.
Asuta.
Asuta.
Gave birth to.
Gave birth to.
Shat.
Shat.
Six.
Six.
Atmajan.
Atmajan.
Sons.
Sons.
Pushparnam.
Pushparnam.
Pushparna.
Pushparna.
Tigma Ketum.
Tigma Ketum.
Tigma Ketu.
Tigma Ketu.
Cha.
Cha.
Also.
Also.
Isham.
Isham.
Isha.
Isha.
Urjam.
Urjam.
Urja.
Urja.
Vasum.
Vasum.
Vasu.
Vasu.
Jayam.
Jayam.
Jaya.
Jaya.
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. King Vatsara had a very dear wife whose name was Svaviti, and she gave birth to six sons named Pushpana, Tigmaketu, Isha, Urja, Vasu, and Jaya. Purport. Vatsara's wife is mentioned here as Ishta, which means worshipable. In other words, it appears that Vatsara's wife had all good qualities. For example, she was always very faithful and obedient and affectionate to her husband. She had all good qualities for managing household affairs. If both the husband and wife are endowed with good qualities and live peacefully, then nice children take birth, and thus the whole family is happy and prosperous. Omegyan Timadandasya Gidanjana Shalakaya Chakshur Militam Jena Tasmay Sri Gurave Namaha. Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swa Padantikam Pancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vyevacha Petitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Rama Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, this part of the Bhagavatam, we have a genealogical discussion, which means we're hearing about history of dynasties. And many parts of the Bhagavatam are like this. Ninth canto in particular, you have like a lineage, a big description. At the end of the Bhagavatam, 11th canto, particularly 12, another description of the lineages. So someone can say, what is the purpose or the necessity of that? You know, sometimes it just goes for verses and verses. We just hear this name and that name and then like that. Because the Bhagavatam is a Purana, and to be a Purana, there are certain qualifications. For any Shastra, to be authorized, it has to have meet certain criteria. And one of the criteria of a Purana is, Purana literally means ancient or old. So one of the criteria for the Purana means it must discuss the genealogical table, the history of the universe, the dynasties. That's why you'll see in all the Puranas there'll be a description like that, because it's a historical narrative of the history of the universe. So it will describe different dynasties coming down. Just like in the ninth canto, then we'll hear about the Surya Vamsh and the Chandra Vamsh. So it will describe the dynasty coming from the sun god, and the most prominent member of the dynasty coming from the sun god is Ramachandra himself, Lord Ramachandra. And the most prominent member of the Chandra Vamsh, now the moon dynasty, is Krishna. Lord Krishna himself. So this is necessary. And then it becomes authorized and qualified. Otherwise, people may read these things and they may not be convinced. They may not understand what is taking place. They'll think, well, what is the context? So the Bhagavatam is an historical narrative, but the history goes back much, much further. It's not like modern history. Modern history, if you go to the educational institutions, if you go to Melbourne University, Melbourne University is considered one of the top universities in the world. Right? It's ranked number 27 or something like that on the world. What's it ranked now? 30? Yeah, it's dropped dramatically. It's only 36 or something like that. It's still pretty good. You know, the amount of universities in the world is number 36. It's quite prominent. It's one of the top universities in the world. But if you go into the history department and if you hear the description in the history department, modern history is only quite accurate going back around about 3,000 years. Right? Even you go back 2,000 years, there's a lot of obscurity. I mean, we don't really know a lot about Jesus. On one level, we do. Jesus is one of the most documented people in history. That's why he's so prominent. And so prominent and so powerful, such a shaper of history. He's like, you know, son of God, you know, a direct representative of God coming from the spiritual world, just like Srila Prabhupada. You know, so people say his name every day. You know, even I was walking down the street the other day, you hear people say, Jesus, Jesus. I mean, they're not thinking of Jesus, but it's just what everyone says. You know, you get out of the car and you bump yourself, oh, Jesus. You know, people say it, even I say it, you know, because, you know, I was brought up in this culture, so sometimes, yeah, if I bump myself, I say, oh, Jesus, not thinking of Jesus. But such a powerful person. But even if you go back 2,000 years to his life, there's still obscurity around it. In the Bible, which is the main body of text discussing his life in the New Testament, between the age of 12 and 30, there's not a lot of mention of his life. That's 18 years of your life. Imagine, you know, we're writing a biography of you, and then 18 years is missing. Right? So then what did, you know, if we write a biography about Prabhupada, Lilamrita, but there's 18 years missing, what was Prabhupada doing? Yeah. Most likely, and these things can't be proven because we don't have the historical fact, but most likely he was in India at that time. When he was born, wise men came from the east. So if you go east from the Middle East, if you go back, you'll head back towards, you go through Afghanistan, Pakistan, India. So most likely he was in India. And Prabhupada even said on several occasions he could have been in India. So historically things are not so accurate. And then you go back 3,000 years, you know, at the incarnation of Buddha, and then you go back 5,000 years, it becomes totally lost in modern history. They don't talk about 5,000 years or 7,000 years with any confidence or accuracy. So these books, which we read, are dated from us at being recorded 5,000 years ago. You know? Modern history, some of the historians, when they speak about the Vedic literatures, they say they're 3,000 years old. You know? Because it's more within their comfort zone. If you go back another 2,000 years, it was like, you know, 7,000 years ago, they say, you know, there was still people walking around like cavemen and, you know, like this. So, you know, it wasn't developed human society. The Bhagavad Gita gives a historical narrative, but it is different, vastly different from the modern historical description. And it's a leap of faith. You have to have... Life is about faith. Spiritual life begins with Shraddha. Adol, Shraddha, which means the beginning is Shraddha or faith. That's where it all begins. Spiritual life is all about faith. Life is all about faith. Right? We all have faith. Right? We do everything we do based on Shraddha. I'll do this today or that today based on faith. Right? If you don't have faith in something, you won't pursue it. So either you have faith in these descriptions, which are radical, according to the modern context. It's a radical description. I mean, you look at the things in our books, right? Our universe is described, right? It's a big shell, right? And at the bottom of the shell, half of this universe is filled with water from the perspiration of God, who's lying in the bottom of the ocean, the Garbhodaka ocean of the universe, right? Garbhodakshay Vishnu, right? And his perspiration, that fills up. So, you know, modern scientists will say, well, then give us the Hubble telescope. We'll look down to the bottom of the universe, right? And you'll see Lord Vishnu lying there. Right? Radical descriptions. You know, and we actually believe these things. Right? This is radical stuff. So you have to choose where your faith is. Right? And we choose to have faith in it. We actually believe these things. Right? And then people say, well, why can't you see Lord Vishnu lying? Because you don't have spiritual vision. No? Lord Brahma says in Brahma Samhita, Premanjanaj Charita Bhakti Valochanena, you must have spiritual vision, then you can see spirit. That's why we could not see Lord Vishnu lying at the bottom of the ocean. And then the materialist will say, oh, that's very convenient. Every time you can't explain something, you say, oh, you don't have spiritual vision, you can't like that. Well, that's what we believe, that's our understanding. So it's a question of faith. This is where our faith lies. But then equally, they'll say, oh, you guys are just like brainwashed or sentimental. You're fanatics. You believe in all these things which can't be proven. Okay, and we'll say, okay, that's real. That's realistic. That's fair. We can't prove it empirically. I can't show you Mahavishnu. I can't show you Lord Nrisimhadev jumping out of a pillar. You know, we believe a lion god smashed out of a pillar, right? And attacked Hiranyakashipu on a different planet millions of years ago. Right? And people say, you people are very nice. You know, this is what you believe. We actually believe these things, right? But then if you go to the other side, they'll say, well, you believe these things are radical. But then we'll go to what they believe. They believe that they believe that apes gave birth to humans. Equally as radical. Prove it. oh, you know, we found this bone in Indonesia. And if you put this bone, which was 7 meters away from that bone, together, it definitely Neanderthal man, Java man, the in-between, the missing link. You know, if there is a missing link, right, if we were apes and then we became humans, then within the archaeological evidence of the earth, if you dig up the crust in the earth, you should be finding these missing links, these skeletal evidence everywhere. It should be there everywhere. They find everything. No, it's not there. Right? And then Jhutakarma Prabhu wrote a very nice book a few years ago, Forbidden Archaeology. Same as everything else. It's all cover-ups. Right? You can't trust the modern world because they cover up so many things. They're cheating. And we see so many things are coming out now. And they say, oh, yeah, they were cheating. Oh, yes, conspiracies are true. Many of the conspiracies are true. Right? So, forbidden in archaeology, right? They try to point out that Darwin's theory of evolution is correct. And if something doesn't match into that theory, then they remove the archaeological evidence. But the fact is, right? They found remains of humans going back millions of years in the crust of the earth. Yeah. So the fact is that we believe in one way. They say, well, you can't prove. We say, well, you can't prove either. So now it's a question of faith. Where is your faith? Is it here in the Vedic literatures, in the radical descriptions of the Vedic literatures, or is it in the radical descriptions of modern science and modern civilization? So what are you going to choose? Yeah. I choose the Vedic literatures. Why? Right? Because the food is better. Huh? Our food's better, right? You want to? Right? It's a fact, right? Everything is better in our life. Everything is better, right? You compare the two. You look at that civilization and our civilization, right? And you compare that. You've got to have faith in one or the other, right? Our food is sattvic. Mode of goodness. It is pure. It is prasadam, ultimately. It's offered to God himself, ultimately. Their food is tamasic, rajasic, like that. It is, you know. So you have to choose. Their lifestyle is tamasic. It is rajasic. Ours is full of sattva. So you have to choose. You have faith in one or you have faith in the other. So we choose to have faith in this. And it's experiential. How do you prove the Vedas? How do you prove that all these things are correct? Now, how can you prove that there's a God laying in an ocean at the bottom of this universe, whose navel comes a lotus flower, and the universe is contained within the stem of that lotus flower? The Milky Way, you know the Milky Way? If you come to the farm, hard to see in Melbourne because so many lights, but if you come to the farm on a dark moon night and if the sky is clear, you can see the Milky Way. That is the stem of the lotus. That is the lotus going up. Starts in the south, back here, and goes straight up to the north. And you see it kind of spirals up and kind of disappears into the sky. Right? And we're in the middle planetary system. Of the 14 planetary systems within, we're in the seventh. Right? And you can see it. It actually takes off. And Lord Brahma is right up there somewhere, much higher than everyone else. Right? How do we prove these things? How do you know that is all true, all these things? Right? One way, primarily. You chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Right? Spiritual life is experiential. Right? And Prabhupada gives the nice example. You can't taste honey when you're licking the outside of the jar. Right? Have you ever done this experiment? Have you done it? Actually, don't you lick the outside of a honey jar? Okay, that's weird. But thank you for coming with me. That's all. I don't know if I've actually done it. But Prabhupada speaks about it. You get the outside of the onion, you lick the other. You don't taste anything, right? You have to open the jar, you get in there, and then you taste the honey. Yeah? When you're chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, if you chant it properly, one problem is devotees are not chanting very nicely. When you chant this Maha Mantra, it is a meditation. It is union with God. Prabhupada says, Radha and Krishna dance on your tongue when you chant the Hare Krishna Mantra. Right? So meditate like that. Right? It's a profound experience. Right? When we're chanting, God is personally present as sound vibration. Right? So we are chanting the Hare Krishna mantra and we experience something. Right? Hands up if you have experienced something when you chant Hare Krishna. Ever. Once. Right? Or every day. Right? We experience something. Right? There is something there. Param jishtva nivartate. There is a bliss. Anandam buddhi vardhanam. Right? All these statements are there. Right? It is an ever-expanding ocean of bliss. It's described in the Shikshastika. Mm-hmm. So when you're chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, you feel that union with God. You feel bliss. And then you say, well, the Vedas say, chant this Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Right? These literatures. So you chant it, it works. You feel connected to God, you feel realization. So then when you read the other statements, because of your experience from the chanting, then you can believe, well, I can't prove it, I can't see it, but I believe it. By the process of purification. Cheto, dapana, marjanam. Purification. Right? And then everything becomes clear. Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam dadami buddhi yogam tam. Now Krishna says you will get buddhi. What sort of buddhi will you get? The ability to understand these things. It becomes clear. The more you chant and the more sincerely you perform the bhakti yoga process. Everything becomes purified. And then you can understand, you can perceive all of these things. So you have to make your choice. And sometimes devotees leave Krishna consciousness. Why do they leave? Right? Because usually they're committing offenses and they're chanting. And when you commit offenses and you're chanting, you become covered. Right? You're not getting the revelation anymore. You're not feeling Krishna's presence anymore. Right? And then you become disconnected. And when you become disconnected, you lose your taste, you lose your appreciation, and you go away. Right? And then when you go away, what takes place? Right? And then you may doubt these things. Or even one devotee, disciple of Devamrita Swami, maybe 10 years ago, something like that, living here in Melbourne in the ashram. But obviously there was something wrong with the practice. I think he's come back now. I think he's practicing again, to some degree. But back then, something wrong with the practice. He was saying to me one day, you know, you see these pictures? You know, Krishna has 8 arms, Vishnu, or 4 arms even. 4 arms is enough. You know, you ever seen anyone with 4 arms? I never saw, right? But it says, I mean, all our pictures, you know, over there. You got 4 arms or...? Many arms, yeah. I mean, it's like, yeah, multiple personalities. It's like his head's coming out and his arms coming out. But, you know, you see. Not in here, but... So, you know, chaturbhuj, you know, 4 arms. Shadbhuj, 8 arms, you see. Descriptions there, 1,000 arms. So this devotee, he said to me, you know, how could anyone have 1,000 arms? I mean, what is it like? Yes. Yeah. Because, okay, empirically, do I believe someone could have 1,000 arms? Yes, I do. How? I don't know. Honestly, I don't know. How do you do it? But you're dealing with God. And when you're dealing with God, you're dealing with achincha shakti. Achincha means inconceivable potency. Right? Inconceivable. He can do. He can do something which cannot be done, but he can do it. How do you do that? Because you're God. And that's your job description. You can do what? Krishna, what can you do? Anything. Oh. Okay, you are God. We accept you. Huh? And my Guru Maharaj, Tamal Krishna Goswami, he said one time, he said, when you're dealing with Krishna, you get to a point where you just say, you are whatever you are, but I just worship you. Yeah? Because if you try to empirically or from the point of your mind, from the point of your intelligence, from the point of your brain, which is that big compared to the size of this universe, you know, it's really not that big. You know, then if you're trying to understand the totality of creation, of God, it's limited. It's limited. You cannot understand. So you just get to a point where you just say, whatever you are, I worship you. I bow to you. Like that. And that's all we can do. That's achincha. Achincha being just inconceivably potent. So sometimes devotees leave because they lose faith. They question. And why do they? Because they lose a taste in chanting. And when you lose your taste in chanting, you begin to doubt things. And when you begin to doubt things, then you will move away from Krishna consciousness. Now, so it's being described here that this is... there are descriptions here of dynasties which go back millions of years. Right? And someone say, well, how do you prove it? Yes, because it's recorded by great sages. Right? And it has been passed down for thousands of years. So we can say, yes, it is true. Now, this particular section, these are the descendants of Dhruva Maharaj. Right? A few more verses. Someone's going to turn up who's quite famous. What's his name? Anga, yeah. And then he has a son.
Vena.
Very good, yeah. Vena is going to turn up. So we won't speak about him today because he's coming next week. A few more days, Vena will come. A bad boy. Not good. Pagal. Crazy guy. He was a kid. How old are you? 5 years old?
Seven.
7 years old. So he was like 5, 7, like that. He used to go and play with his friends. They're next to a cliff, right? And you say, oh, what's that? And his friend would look at it and he'd go, push him over the cliff. His friend would die. And he'd just laugh. He'd say, ha, ha, ha. And then go off. And then he killed some other friend. Crazy guy. Right? And he was going to become the king. And then they deal with him later on. You see in the chapter, and then they kill him. The Brahmanas have to kill him because... So, but here, we're hearing the dynasties coming. The sons of Dhruva. And then we're hearing about the dynasty. So, when we study Srimad Bhagavatam, the Bhagavatam is the essence of a devotee's life, actually. Sometimes you lose enthusiasm in Krishna consciousness. Do you ever lose enthusiasm sometimes? Yeah? Yeah? Everyone says yeah. Sometimes it goes down? Down? No, not like we lose everything, but sometimes we struggle, goes down. Actually, one of the main reasons is because we're not reading the Bhagavatam. If you're in... Even, say I'm touching it now. Even just touching the Bhagavatam is purifying. You don't ever have to lose any enthusiasm. But you have to develop shelter of the Bhagavatam. And Sanatan Goswami gives a beautiful verse in glorification of Bhagavatam. He says, you are my best friend. You are my master. You are my only shelter. He says all these things. But we should feel like this about Bhagavatam. He's my best friend. Yeah? Just like I live on the farm, Hare Krishna Valley. Has anyone been there? Hare Krishna Valley? Hare Krishna Valley? Yeah. I live there. I'm the manager, so Hare Krishna. Nice to meet you. Please come and visit us. No? Yeah, okay. Doesn't know yes, no. So, at Hare Krishna Valley. So sometimes people say to me, how are the cows? Well, we have 18 cows there. Yeah. Beautiful cows. Very beautiful. Well, everyone has a name. And the kids are very peaceful down there at Hare Krishna Valley. Not like the kids in Melbourne. So, people ask me sometimes, quite often, how are the cows? Because we're very close to the cows, because we spend time with them regularly and they all have names, they're part of our family, all have different personalities. And I always say, when people say, how are the cows? I say, they're the only people who don't give me any problems. All of you, some problems. I come to Melbourne once a week and then I get all the problems. I'm not speaking to this one. Oh, I'm not speaking to that one. Oh, I have to have a meeting today, and oh, this is going to happen. Oh my God. So I go back down to the farm just to escape for a week to get my head back together, and then I come back to counsel everyone again. This is the material world. But the cows don't get problems. The cows do not get problems. So in spiritual life, sometimes our enthusiasm goes down, right? And then it comes back up again, like that. So we should feel like this, because in our lives, the Bhagavatam is our shelter, ashraya. Right? It is the shelter. And as long as you feel connected to the Bhagavatam, you can go through any problem in life, no matter what the problem is. Actually, all the problems, your big problems, just go shrink down when you open the pages of the Srimad Bhagavatam and you study. But you have to study deeply. You have to connect to the Bhagavatam, right? So the Bhagavatam has many lessons to teach us. Just like when you hear Bhagavatam class, sometimes do you think like it's speaking just to you? Do you ever feel like that? You hear a class? Or sometimes you read and you feel like, you know, it's speaking straight to you? It's almost like, you know, is there someone watching me or something? You know, sometimes I read, I open up, it's like Prabhupada and his purport is speaking to me directly what I'm going through, right? It happens all the time. So this is the potency of the Bhagavatam. It is alive. It is kind of, because it is Krishna, non-different from Krishna. It is described in the end of the third chapter of the first canto. Six questions are asked in the first chapter. What was the first chapter called?
Questions by the sages.
Yeah, questions by the sages. How many questions are there? Six questions, yeah. And what are the six questions? There are six questions. No? Okay, number six, the last question is, where are Dharma and Jnana, knowledge and religion, where are they now that Krishna is gone? Right. And then the chapter 2 and chapter 3 are the answers to those six questions. Right. So then at the end of chapter 3, that question is answered. Where is religion, Dharma, and where is Jnana, where is knowledge gone now that Krishna has left the planet? Sukadev says, Bhagavata, literary incarnation of God. This is Krishna. This is Krishna in literary form. That's why I feel purified by hearing it. That's why you have to hear every day. Nityam Bhagavata, Sevaya. That is your seva, means service. You have to hear the Bhagavatam every day. And you have to stay awake in the class. Right? If we don't stay awake in the class, then what benefit do you get? What benefit do you get? What was the class about? I'm not sure. No. Who gave class today? Was it Keshava or was it Aniruddha Prabhu? Sometimes not even listening. So how are you going to get benefit? But the Bhagavatam teaches us many, many, many things. And one of the points, when I started to study the Bhagavatam, I started studying many years ago, but seriously, just close the door. It's just a little bit cold. Then, when I started studying it seriously, was in 1991. And as a devotee, we look back at our lives. Right? So, you know, I've been a devotee nearly 30 years now, so I look back, and then I think, all the things that happened in my devotional service that shaped me as a devotee. And the most significant thing, if I look back in 30 years, the one thing that shaped me more than anything else in my Krishna consciousness was I went to VIHE semester in January 1991. And I learned to study the Bhagavatam. They had a course on studying the Srimad Bhagavatam, which Burajan Prabhu set up, my Shiksha Guru. Yeah. So then, that month, teaching, I mean, the VIHE was amazing back then. You know, the teachers were Tamal Krishnamaraj, Giriraj Swami, Danadhar Swami, Burajan Prabhu, Prahladananda Swami. Then I have to think, some more there as well. But I mean, very, very powerful teachers, very powerful. You know, it's like, you know, some of the most powerful devotees in our movement would come and teach. You know, for 1 month, you would just sit there, And 5 days a week for 1 month, just classes, like being in a college, like a school. And we study, and one of the courses you have to take on your first semester that you come there, you have to study the Srimad Bhagavatam. There's a course, systematic, study the Bhagavatam. And I learned the Bhagavatam has to be studied systematically. And study means, like, you read it and you take notes and you contemplate it. You know, it's different to reading. Study and reading are two different things. So you have to study. That's why we start these courses. That's why Prabhupada said Bhakti Shastri, Bhakti Vaibhava, Bhakti Vedanta, Bhakti Sarvabhauma. We have the courses. They're there for that point. So you can study it deeply and imbibe it into your life. And then, if you do that, by that purification and that constant wisdom and counselling you're getting from the Bhagavatam, you don't have so many problems in your life as a devotee. Now, I see devotees have so many problems. Right, and then they come and say, "Oh, Prabhu, I've got some problems. Can I talk to you?" "Yeah, no problem." So we sit down. "What's the problem?" They start saying, "Oh, there's no." I say, "Are you studying the Bhagavatam regularly?" "Prabhu, I don't read." "Hare Baba. No wonder your mind is crazy." "No, you don't study? What do you expect? This is the system. Nityam Bhagavata say it's the system. You have to study." Right? So we're studying. Right? And if I look back on my life, that was one of the most important things that shaped me as a devotee, right? I learned to study Prabhupada's book seriously, right? And if you do that, you don't have so many problems in devotional service. Life always brings problems, right? Hands up if you don't have any problems in your life right now, right? Even the brahmacharis don't put up their hands. Yeah, that's amazing because, you know, Prabhupada said, brahmachari, brahmacharini life, that is the best life. There's nothing better. But even you guys are not putting your hands up, so, you know, it means something. But that's the material energy. Material energy means always problems. But if you study the Bhagavatam, it's okay. You can live with the problems. They don't consume you. They don't override you. You have the ability to navigate through it. So one thing we learned when I started studying the Bhagavatam many years ago, one of the key features of the Bhagavatam is it is full of Vedic cultural points. Right, how to live properly. Because the main point of the Bhagavatam establishes two things, really. The first thing is that Krishna is supreme. Right? The second thing is that bhakti is the process to reach Krishna. They're really the two principal messages of the Bhagavatam, if you look at the whole Shastra. Right? But then, there are many sub-points. These are called Vedic cultural points. Right? How do I do this? How do I? Because I'm in the material world. We're in the material world, right? Right. And in 1996, I was a brahmachari. I'm living in the ashram. Right? I was the number one book distributor in Australia. Right. So I was, like, you know, fully absorbed as a brahmachari, just, like, you know, powering and everything. And then I was listening to a lecture one morning, my Guru Maharaj, and he said, "You will not get out of the material world until you realize you are in the material world." Right. And that one line, that completely transformed and changed me. Because, you know, I realized I had material. That's why I changed ashram. Because, right? I was a brahmachari, I was very figure and like that, but not enough purification in the heart. So then I realized I'm in the material world. I have this body. I still identify it with it. I have to situate myself properly so that I can progress towards Krishna. Right? If you can stay brahmachari whole life, do it. If you can become a sannyasi, do it. But if your adhikara is grihast, then do that. There is no disadvantage. Prabhupada says in the Gajendra Moksha pastime. Yeah, just find out. So, yeah, devotees get so mental. Oh, should I get married? Should I not get? Who cares? Just get married or don't get. Who cares? I don't really care, to be honest. Serve Krishna. Chant the holy name. Absorb yourself in Krishna consciousness. That's the point. You know, I'm grihasta. I've been grihasta for 20 years or something. Yeah, over 20 years now, right? Grihasta, but just serve Krishna. Who cares what color your cloth is? Yeah, that's not the important point. The important point is, what is your relationship with Krishna like and your guru? That's actually the essence of everything. So here, we're hearing about many Vedic cultural points, because while we're in the material world, you need advice how to live in the material world. Krishna says in Gita, Chatur Vanyam Mayashustam Guna Karma Vibhagasha. You have guna, you have karma. You act in a particular way, and you have particular qualities. According to those qualities, which are conditioned, right? They're not your original qualities, they're conditioned, you have to act in a particular way. Right? So now the Bhagavatam is teaching these things. So it says here in this verse, it speaks about the wife of the king. Right? And it says some basic points. What should wives be like? Right? It says they should be faithful, obedient, and affectionate to their husbands. Right? This was many thousands of years ago. But at least one point. Okay, let's just get one point. Faithful. Faithful. Obedient, that's another thing. Obedient is another thing. It means generally. It means, actually, for Grihastha life to be successful, there has to be respect. That's how it becomes successful. If there's not respect between the husband and wife, it doesn't work. That's the point. Obedience is another thing. Yeah, like my wife, I wouldn't describe her as being obedient to me. Oh, Prabhuji, what can I do for you now? Can I cook you some chapatis? Oh, Prabhuji, what sort of sabji would you like? No, it's not like that. It's not like obedient. But there is respect. That's the point. And she will follow my lead. But not like, you know, walking behind like, oh, Prabhuji, anything, you know, just do whatever you want. No, it's not like that. If you want that in this day and age, this is where we have to take the Vedic time and the modern time. And that's where sometimes we struggle, right? You have to adjust things according to the time, place, and circumstance. Even Prabhupada did that. Like Prabhupada invented brahmacharini ashram. There's no such thing. There isn't even a word in the Vedas. You know, where is it in Sanskrit? Have you ever read? No? Have you read the Padma Purana? The Vishnu Purana? Brahma Vaivata Purana? Right? Right? The Upanishads? Have you read the Upanishads? There is no word. Brahmacharini. All right, and then Prabhupada comes, 1965, to America, 66. Prabhupada gives second initiation to his first batch of disciples, 66. Gives some of his disciples second initiation in ISKCON, what we call Brahman initiation. And he wasn't going to give it to the females. He wasn't Jadarani in the original. He wasn't going to give it because it's not there. You don't get the Upanaya, you don't get the thread and everything. The women don't get that. They came to him. Right? Prabhupada was giving it to the men. They heard. They came to Prabhupada. They said, we will leave if you don't give it to us. Right? So Prabhupada thought about it very deeply. He said, yes, it is different now. Right? So then he gave. Right? Brahminical initiation to the women. That's not there in the Vedas. Right? And then, right, Prabhupada said, you could see women, men. Right? So he said, okay, brahmacharini. Prabhupada made that, brahmacharini ashram. Right now we're brahmacharini ashram. Right? Adjusting time, place, circumstance in the modern age. So the basic point is there has to be respect. That's the point. If Grihastha life is going to work, there has to be respect. If any life is going to work, any relationship is going to work. You know, you're living with the other brahmacharis. Sometimes the brahmacharis are all not getting along and all these things. Right? If you're in the brahmachari ashram, the brahmacharini ashram, and between the brahmacharis, they're not getting along, all these things, it's because there's not enough respect. That's the essence of all relationships. You must be respectful. That's why Prabhupada said you have to call each other Prabhu. Oh, Prabhu. Oh, Prabhu. Oh, Prabhu. We have to have that respectful mood. Everyone should be seen as superior to us, and then you won't have so many conflicts. I mean, conflicts will always be there, but you can deal with them in a Vaishnav way, in a nice way. That's the point. So there's many, many cultural points here which are mentioned, and if we study the Bhagavatam, we'll learn how to be ideal human beings. That's why we study the Bhagavatam, so we can learn how to behave ideally, because you hear in the Bhagavatam, ideal relationships. Then you can imbibe those qualities and then you can become a pure devotee. If you become a pure devotee, you can go back to Goloka Vrindavan. Sri Goloka Vrindavan Dharma Ki. That's why Prabhupada said, go back home, back to Godhead. You want to stay in the material world forever? Hands up. Right? None of us want to stay here. But to be honest,
I don't think most of us are working hard enough to get out either. That's just, if you want to evaluate it all honestly. Okay, we don't want to be here anymore. We want to go back and live with God. You think that is cheap? Just like if you want to go to some event in Melbourne, right? So if you want to get into the event, sometimes you have to pay thousands of dollars to go to an event, right? Oh, you can go to the event, but you have to pay, you know, big money. If you want to get to the front of the stage, you have to pay sometimes thousands of dollars. You know, what's his name? Tony Robbins? You know Tony Robbins? No one knows. Okay. Yeah, you know. Yeah, Tony Robbins. Like, it costs $5,000 just to get into a room with him for a week to do a seminar. $5,000. And that's like the low level. You know, the people who want to get close to him and meet him, you know, they have to pay more money. He's a life coach, world's biggest life coach. So then if you want to get close to these people, he just did a event in London. He had 13,000 people there paying $5,000 minimum to be with him. So he made like $20 or $40 million just on in a week on one event. Because people want to be, oh, what's he going to say? What's he going to, like that. So you want to be with God, with Krishna, you have to pay the mula. That's why if you're a grihastha, we say, give some money to the temple. Oh, Prabhuji, I can't do it. Oh, Prabhuji, just, I can't remember my bank account number or something. Yanam smritir apohanam cha. Oh, yeah. When you want to forget everything, oh, yeah, that's easy. But it's not, it's money. You don't buy Krishna with money. You buy Krishna with bhakti, with devotion. Right? As a grihastha, you have to give money. Because right? That's how you become purified. Dana. So that's pure. It's a Vedic cultural point, that's all. But you have to reach Krishna, that's the point. And to reach Krishna, you have to become purified in consciousness. It's not easy. Right? So when you become serious, then Krishna will come. You take one step to Krishna, Krishna will take 10 to you. Okay. So we'll stop there, see if there's any questions or comments what we discussed.
In this temple, we were fortunate, we had this course like Bhakti Shastri, Bhaktivedanta, Bhaktivaiva, but to get into it, it also takes some time, like the course are really going on, so there's some difficulty. So how can we study Bhagavatam personally, systematically and deeply?
How? You just have to learn the methodology, that's all. How to do it. Have you seen the book? There's a little study book. It's many years old now. That Burajan Prabhu put out. It's called Studying Srimad Bhagavatam. You haven't seen it? Yeah, it's rare now. I've got a copy at home. If you remind me, I'll give it to you. But if you lose it, then our relationship will change dramatically. But yeah, it's a book which teaches you how to study the Bhagavatam. Very nice book. I'll give it to you if you make a copy of it. Now you can make a copy, you can photocopy it or something. You know how to do that? Is that okay? Yeah, if you want. I'm just saying practically. Yeah. If you remind me, because I've got lots of things going on all the time. But I will give it to you. You make a copy and you have to have it back to me in 1 week. And then you can pass it around to everyone else as well. No, because I mean, my library at the farm is one of the best libraries probably in Australia. Of Vaishnava literature. You know, Gangeshwar Prabhu also has a very good library. He's a very, you know, when I die, then I'll give it somewhere where I know it's going to. You know, I have a lot of books, which are rare now, which you can't get anymore. Mm-hmm. Like that. So I'll give it to you. But, you know, sometimes devotees say, oh, yeah. And I've lost books because I trusted people and then they didn't. Mm-hmm. Prabhupada said, to lend is to lose. Mm-hmm. Prabhupada said that. To lend is to lose. So I say to devotees now, I'll give it to you, right? You have 1 week, you copy it, you give it back to me. If you don't give it back to me, our relationship will change. So it means that you're talking about our friendship. Your friendship. I mean, I'll still be your friend, but it means I'd be very disappointed. Mm-hmm. That's what it means. So. But I trust you, that's why I would consider it. Some people I wouldn't even consider. Tike acha. But yeah, that's my advice. You have to learn to systematically study it. And the book teaches you how. And then I can give you advice how to. If I tell you now, it's like, yeah, it's okay.
Second question. Like last week, I was speaking to a person and we started reading Srila Prabhupada's books, and he got to some of those little more challenging points. And he used to tell me that he feels that Prabhupada is outdated. It's like, so how do we deal with persons?
Yeah, it's a challenge in our preaching. It's a challenge in our preaching. We give Prabhupada's books to people, and it's challenging because it's a long way, it's a long distance for people to travel from where they're at now in the way the world is now, mm-hmm. to what Prabhupada is speaking about and asking us to do. And we really have to give people a lot of time and attention to help them all the way through that. And they will have doubts and obstacles, and to help them through that so they stay like that. And it's up to them. It's their individual choice. We can't force anyone, so we just have to encourage them and explain. So it is challenging. Like, you give someone the Bhagavad Gita, right? So we say, read the Bhagavad Gita. It's our primary book, right? Our beginning book. It's not actually our beginning book. Yeah, when I'm preaching to someone, they're coming new, I give them Coming Back, Higher Taste, Chant and Be Happy. These are the books that I usually give people to start with. I don't even see the Bhagavad Gita as our beginning book. Yeah, Bhagavad Gita is not easy to understand. You know, you give that to someone, that's our beginning book. It's like, people read a lot. Yeah, I gave it to my grandmother. She started reading the first chapter and she just rang me and said, "What is this about?" Yeah, usually if I give Gita to someone, I say, don't read the first chapter first. I say, go to chapter 2, because chapter 2 is philosophical.
Yeah.
Chapter 1 is like, you know, observing the armies on the battlefield. It's like, you know, Drona was there and Ashwatthama was there. Everyone's like, you know, that's difficult. Okay, so even the Bhagavad Gita. So you give Bhagavad Gita to someone, and then they read the first chapter. And in the first chapter it says, Prabhupada writes, women are less intelligent. Right. So we just disconnected 50% of the planet. Right? That's a challenge. That's seriously a challenge. I've had many women over the years. Now I have to deal with that. So we have to be able to guide people and explain what that actually means. Women are not less intelligent. Right? Many women are much more intelligent. Yeah, half the time I'm dealing with the women, they're much more intelligent than men. You ask the men to do something, they're like, oh. Yeah. Oh, oh. You ask the woman to do it, it's like, bang, 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 it's done. So they're not less intelligent. How do we explain it? The way I explain it, based on the way it was explained to me by Bhakti Vijayapurna Swami, who was one of our gurus. Maharaj said, women are more emotional, I think, generally. And even they'll argue that these days. Oh, we're not more emotional, so you're being... Oh, so it's difficult these days to preach, right? But I think most women will accept, women are more emotional, generally, not all the time, generally than men, right? So because the brain has two sides. One side is rational, the other side is emotional, right? So there are two sides there. And a man's brain can only function on one side at one time. A man is either emotional or rational. He's not crossing, right? That's the way the man's brain works. The woman's brain is emotional and rational, but it changes. Like, simultaneously, it's working like... It's going like that. So when a man is rational, he can make a more rational decision, right? You know, like, there's an emergency taking place. I'm speaking generally, right? There's an emergency taking place. The man can just go straight to that left side of the brain and deal with it. The woman is dealing with it because it's an emergency and it's rational, but her emotions may be throwing in there all the time, right? Whereas when a man, he's dealing with emergency, but he's on the emotional side, he's useless. Because it's all about his I want this, you know, he's useless. So I don't describe women as less intelligent, I say they are more emotional, generally. Like that. So, you know, we have to learn how to present things like that. So many, and there are many statements in Prabhupada's books which are challenging, so... In this day and age, we really have to go very... we have to invest a lot of time and energy into helping people become devotees. Because the way the modern world is and the way people think, and what's written in Prabhupada's books, which sometimes is very traditional, we really have to help people to adjust and accept and understand these things. So it's a great challenge. Does that make sense?
Actually, it brings up another question.
Yeah.
Like when we go for book distribution, like usually it's like a strategy, you give everyone who receive you the first Bhagavad Gita, then if they're ready, maybe you pile it up, or if they're not ready, then you give another small book. But you always start with the Gita. So if most people anyway is not able to really get into it, then...
Yeah, so I don't agree with that. I don't agree. Like I said, I was a full-time book distributor when I was a brahmachari. And even when I became a Grihastha star, I was quite often doing full-time books. So, you know, I stopped giving the Bhagavad Gita on the street as my main book, because we have our main book. You know, we have many books when we're on the street. I stopped giving the Gita years ago. You know, my main book was SSR, JSD, Quest for Enlightenment. They were my Journey of Self-Discovery.
Oh, yeah.
They still have that?
Yeah, they have it.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah, it means one of these books. They were my main books. Bhagavad Gita is, if I meet someone who's really interested, okay, I say, okay, now we've got this extra book. But yeah, definitely, I don't think it's the right book to give out on the street as the main book. I don't think, you know, to introduce someone on the street who knows nothing, Bhagavad Gita. Yeah, I used to distribute Gita, and then, like, you know, a month later, the same guy would walk down the street, and then he'd say to me, "Oh yeah, I brought this a month ago." I say, "How do you like it?" He said, "I can't understand it." So that's why I started doing the other books. That's my opinion. Everyone has a different opinion. That's my opinion. Any other questions? Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki.